Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Time for Spectrum West, a program about the arts, music, and culture of West Wisconsin. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along today. We have the scoop on the 8th Annual Northwoods Rock Rally starting today, Thursday, going through Saturday in a very cool natural setting near Glen Flora, Wisconsin. That's on Highway 8, a few miles east of Ladysmith. Wayne Zank is here to tell us what we need to know. More music of a quieter nature comes out of the mind and guitar of Billy McLaughlin. Since we last talked, He's grown in his forced transformation. He's playing better than ever, won an Emmy for a PBS concert called Starry Night, and is getting ready to cross the border and visit Wisconsin at least a couple times before the end of the year. Billy's our guest today. Jim Oliver welcomes Blaine Halverson to explain the independent yet cooperative nature of the Red Cedar Youth Stage, including an original play there, taking on the road to Boyceville. We have a verbal inventory of what's on stage in West Wisconsin, and let's commence the hosting of interesting people right here. People ask me about my travels, whether I've been to Europe, etc. My reply is usually, well, there's still a bunch of corners in America I have yet to see. Although it's a bit sad to go through life visiting exotic places only through brochures and other people's photographs. But you know, there are places in Wisconsin I haven't even visited, and Herbster is one of them. I've been to Ashland, briefly to Bayfield, but haven't jumped on Lucky Highway 13 and hit the Lake Superior South Shore in Wisconsin. I've decided that'll have to change. But until it does, I will live vicariously through accounts from people like Jane Herrick. She's on the phone to tell us about this weekend's Herbster Studio Art Tour. Well, I have to tell you, Jane, that Herbster sounds like a nickname for a guy named Herb.
Yeah, it is. That's right. I don't know how really the name came about.
You don't. Okay.
I really couldn't tell you much about that.
Maybe that's where it came from. Maybe there was a guy named Herb. Well, first, some history about the Herbster Studio Art Tour and the same about how artists began to congregate there. Now, often these things happen and people flock and eventually nest in beautiful places where nature beckons. Is that the case up there, do you think?
Yeah. That would be a good definition for how people came up here. It certainly was the reason we came up here, for the beauty, the nature, gorgeous wildflowers. The lake, of course, is gorgeous. Beautiful South Shore. We live on Bark Point. There are several studios on Bark Point. Some people live up here permanently. Others come and go. You know, they might live in the Twin Cities or sure. other places, and then they come up here in the summer or winter. So we're very close to that. The ice caves winter that brought several thousands of people up on the weekend.
I was going to say, you saw crowds of people this winter.
Well, we were not here. We're one of the people that leave.
Oh,
yeah, we're chicken. We went to Arizona.
That's even worse.
We just got out of the area.
Good for you.
But it's been, I worked at the University of Wisconsin mm-hmm. in Eau Claire.
Yeah.
We lived in Eau Claire for about 22 years, and now we live up here permanently.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. I love it up here, especially in the summer and the fall.
Let's get to the particulars of the tour in just a minute. I want to talk about you some more.
Okay.
Because it's important for people to get to know our guests.
Okay.
As you said, you retired from teaching in the Department of Art and Design at UW-Eau Claire. I read that your themes deal with, here we go, the mystery of human presence, using various materials to express emotional relationships and life experiences.
Well, things change. I should probably update that. I did quite a lot of work with identity, sort of inside, outside, looking at emotions of people.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of started when my parents died. They both died within 5 weeks of each other. My father died first. That whole idea came from my mother asking me, well, what do I call myself now? And so I thought that was sort of an interesting question. I mean, I knew where she was going, like Ms. or Mrs. and or just her first name. And I started thinking, well, who are we, and what do we call ourselves? And so I did a whole series of identity, little tiny torsos, larger torsos. I just had a show at the Hudson Hospital, had several torsos that were made from fiber casted over mannequins. You look into the torso, you look out of the torso, a piece called Transparent Self, where you can look in and then, look out. And so, it's sort of the perspective of how people see themselves and mm-hmm. how others see them.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of got into that whole thing. I've kind of moved away from that and now working more with painting and fiber and trying to bring the two together. And that's more of my medium now, bringing the fiber in with the paint. And some of these things are starting to look like landscapes. Some of them are looking like underground kinds of things. So you could still look at that as what people bring to it in terms of, I suppose, their own identity, where they've been, their environment. But I'm sort of moving away from the actual torso motif and moving into some other things, okay, as artists often do.
Sure. Does an artist put their work on hold while they teach others? Did you have to do that over the years?
Well, that's a good question. Yes, I think so. Because I think teaching and doing art are very different. You're thinking about the other person, the student,
yep,
trying to picture what it would be like through their eyes to hear about, you know, a new lesson, a new assignment. You're trying to bring other artists into the picture, showing slides or showing images of other artists, major artists, minor artists' work, to give them ideas as to maybe where they might want to venture themselves. And with, you know, I would hate to just say, okay, we're all going to do it my way, and, you know, this is what we're doing because this is what I do. Mm-hmm. I would never do that. Although I would bring in some techniques that maybe I've used and tried that spills over a little bit into teaching, mm-hmm, and have students try some different things that way. I'm a very experimental artist, by the way. I work a lot in materials. Materials often give me a direction as to where I want to go in my work.
You also get energy from young people. Did you have to replace that surrounding when you retired?
Oh, that's a great question, too. You know, it was difficult. I thought, okay, when I retire in 2008, I'm just going to take off and nonstop. But it didn't happen. I guess it wouldn't be maybe called a block, an artist block, but we came up here and moved up here, actually. And it was like, okay, now let's start working. And it was different. You know, I didn't get the inspiration. I mean, it is beautiful up here, but my work doesn't always revolve around what I see.
Sure.
I mean, it does, but mm-hmm, it doesn't always. So I went back to teaching.
Hmm.
I was asked by the community, various friends and different people I would run into, Bayfield, Cornucopia, Fort Wayne, some of the other towns around, mm-hmm, why don't you do some workshops? So I started, and I did three last summer. And in Arizona, I also do some workshops. Most of them are fiber workshops, but mm-hmm, I do mm-hmm also painting workshops, abstract painting.
I guess I shouldn't worry about you staying busy.
That's for sure.
That's Jane Herrick, and she's on the phone with us to talk about, which is what we're going to get to now, the Herbster Studio Art Tour. We alluded to it at the beginning. It is Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 4 both days. The slogan is Herbster, where the art is next to superior. That's clever. 9 locations, Jane, but other guest artists are in some spots, so as far as humans go, there's more than 9. If you want to go through the locations quickly, that would be fine.
Well, we have, by the way, in the brochure, there's wonderful directions and, you know, locations for each of these studios.
And the brochure is available online.
Yes, you're correct. They're okay. Online. It can be downloaded. They're numbered 1 through 9. We have Greg Giles, and he'll be on Bark Point Road. There's a number, and you'll see on the map where number 1 is. He is a photographer, and he's also a writer, and he lives in the Twin Cities, but he has a cabin up north here on Bark Point Road.
Okay.
And then we have myself. I'm number 2 on Bark Point Road. And then number 3 would be Susan McDonald. She is a writer and a teacher and does work in botanical illustration and paintings on Bark Point Road. Number 4 would be Scott Sample. He is an art director for an advertising agency in the Twin Cities. Has a beautiful home and studio he's building up here. And he does oil pastels and watercolors, mm-hmm, and has some prints as well. That's number 4 on Bark Point Road. And then there's Sarah Mustanen. She's a weaver, and she is located on Highway 13, still in Herbster, about a mile out of town. Does beautiful rugs, gorgeous rugs, and, oh, scarves and things like that. She's involved with pattern and color in her weavings.
I read that she found her loom sitting in a corner at a rummage sale.
You're right. You're right.
That's
she
a great
did.
Story. And, great story.
And didn't know what it was and
yeah,
somehow got it put together, not sure quite how, and started weaving and loved the way the patterns came together and the colors. And that's what makes her day, I guess.
Cool.
Penny Erickson is a quilter. She has her studio right on Highway 13 as well, right in town. Beth Schaff is on Cranberry River Road, out a little ways, but still in Herbster. And she works with glass beads, another way of talking about using a torch with glass and allowing the glass to melt and then moving it around with different tools and shaping it into beads. It incorporates those into a jewelry form, earrings and brooches and things like that. They're quite lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Dale Paulson is on Lenaway Road, and he's number 8. He is a very interesting person. He's a logger, still works at a sawmill. And he, you know, cuts the trees down from a standing tree. So you see, you know, you can look at a standing tree, think of that, and then you see his beautiful work. Turned bowls, salt shakers, things for the kitchen, beautiful furniture out of all kinds of different woods. He really knows his wood. He also sells honey. He's a beekeeper. Then there's Claire Hintz, and she's number 9. She's on Nicoletti Road and owns the farm called Elsewhere Farm. And it's a special exhibit this year, but she will have interns there, plus herself, showing people around on tours of the farm. In her barn, female or, you know, women farmers who have been farming for several years, about 10 years or so, making a living doing this. They're also artists, and so they are bringing agriculture together with art. The artwork will be using some of the materials from the earth, plants, soil, as well as using traditional materials like watercolor. So these women are artists themselves. The artists, all of us, will be going over to her farm on Friday night to see what this looks like. So we haven't seen it yet either.
Wow, that should be fun. Yeah. Also, a big silent auction on Saturday between 11 and 2, each of the artists donating a piece on display for bidding. That's pretty cool. But what, proceeds for that go to future tours?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, funds go to the next year's tour. Exactly. So there will be some wonderful artwork from the artist, one or more pieces that artists that the public can bid on in a silent auction.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, that goes from 10 to 2 on August 16th on Saturday. And they'll be displayed, and people can just come and take a look.
And that's at the community church, is it?
Yes, the Herbster Community Church.
Okay.
And that's on Highway 13, right in town. You know, we're a very small town here.
You are.
So you could easily find it. Anybody could find it quite easily. There'll be signs up.
Huh.
And then in conjunction with the auction will also be a studio tour luncheon.
Mm.
And that will be from 11 to 2, again on the same day at the same time. And there will be a free will offering accepted for that luncheon. So it's more of a donation kind of thing. But
I love luncheons.
Last year's was fantastic. Hopefully this year will be the same.
You can tell it's going to be special when it's not a lunch, but a luncheon.
Right. That's true.
That makes it special. Jane Herrick, thanks for being with us. It's called the Herbster Studio Art Tour. It is this Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4. Herbster's up there where the art is next to Superior. Have a good time. It sounds like you're going to have a good time, and you've been a wonderful source of information. I think people will be coming up there in droves for the tour.
Thank you very much.
No plans for the weekend? Well, we may have just solved it for you, and maybe for me. Summer's a-wastin'. The website is herbsterstudioarttour.com. Thanks again, Jane Herrick, and all the other artists and hosts and volunteers who pull this off in such fine style.
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Volkswagen, featuring the 2014 Passat, offering a 3.6 V6, a clean diesel, or a TSI turbo engine, all with DSG automatic transmissions. KenVance.com.
Got to listen to this for a little bit. Now go ahead, dance. It's okay. Here's a reminder. Friday, the historic Silver Dome Ballroom on Highway 10 near Neillsville presents the unofficial fundraiser for the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park, featuring Howard, Guitar, Lidkey, and Blue Max, with J.J. Holm and the Local Strangers. Music starts at 7 p.m. Spectrum Memo there for you. A little more cha-cha-cha, and then we'll carry on. Well, Jim Oliver is on the West Wisconsin theatrical beat, and here's this week's Oliver Report. Red Cedar Youth Stage will present the original musical Snow White, A Very Pale Fairy Tale on Saturday, August 23rd at Boyceville Community High School. Written and directed by Blaine Helverson, the production will be the first of a new incarnation of the Menominee-based youth theater company. Joining us to talk about the production and the theater company is the writer and the director, Blaine Helverson. Welcome back to Spectrum West.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to be with you.
Well, let's just talk about the theater company.
As many people know, Menominee Theater Guild kind of had us operating kind of under their umbrella for a long time, and very appreciative for the support that they've given us, and they encouraged us to take what we're doing and make it something special and independent. So that's what we're doing, and we're very excited about kind of taking what we've been doing with young people in Menominee and kind of expanding the breadth and depth of what that looks like to other communities and other age demographics.
Tell us a little bit about how the theater company is going to be organized.
Well, it's an independent LLC at this point, the Red Cedar Youth Stage. And then what we're doing is we're also working to develop bylaws and a board of directors to incorporate an affiliated nonprofit. That the intention is to call that the Rhesus Outreach. That will essentially raise funds and provide funding that will help make youth theater opportunities more accessible, both to organizations like community theater organizations, schools, libraries, churches that want to offer opportunities for young people as performers or as patrons, but also to individual families and students who maybe don't have the financial wherewithal to be able to participate to the degree they'd like. So that organization will kind of support with finances opportunities that other people might want to partake in. And those opportunities don't have to be limited to what we do with Red Cedar Youth Stage. Like the Gold Claire Children's Theater, for example, was doing a youth camp, and there's someone who wanted to go and they couldn't afford the tuition. They'll be able to apply for financial assistance to do that.
So what kind of area are you planning to serve? There's small theater companies all over this area. Are you looking to have this a pretty broad area or open to all comers, or how does that work?
I'm open to the distances as far as that goes. Really, the mission is to encourage and create opportunities for young people to engage in the theater arts, whether it's as a performer, as a participant, as a patron. So if we're approached by a school district as far away as the Twin Cities, I'm happy to be a part of that. When it comes to the arts and the community, a rising tide lifts all boats. And so our goal is to serve the arts community in a particular area in whatever way we can. That might be a school district that doesn't have the ability or the funding to create their own shows anymore. Are there ways for us to partner with them to support that? It might be a small community theater company that wants to make something more available to kids but doesn't necessarily have the resources or the knowledge to do that. How can we partner with them? Maybe it's in the range of actually producing with them, or maybe it's in the range of just consulting with them.
He is Blaine Helverson, who is the playwright and director of Snow White, A Very Pale Fairy Tale, a production of the Red Cedar Youth Stage. You said you were contacted by Boyceville Community Ed. Is that something you plan to go out and make contact with community education organizations around the area?
Definitely. There's so many school districts who are just looking to expand what's available within their community, not only to young people, but to their families. And when you want to support young people, you find ways to support their families as well. So that's where this program kind of came from. We were also approached by the Glenwood City School District. And there have also been conversations with people in a couple other nearby communities, smaller communities, and eager and anxious to try to partner in some way.
There is a model, the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond, does youth shows. Are you expecting to do shows for classes from schools and that sort of thing?
That's one of the ideas. I'm really have got a broad range of ideas and am kind of interested to see where it takes me, in the sense that I'm not trying to lock into one particular way of doing things, but to see where is there an eagerness and an enthusiasm about collaboration that can reach more young people with the opportunity. And frankly, you know, organizations like the Old Gem are ones that I'd like to find ways to collaborate with to support one another's work. I really genuinely believe that competition in the arts isn't helpful, and that what we need to do is find ways to support and lift each other up.
The play Snow White, A Very Pale Fairy Tale.
Uh-huh.
Your creation. Tell us about the play.
Well, the play essentially is based on the original Brothers Grimm story. The story essentially starts in the bedroom of two girls, sisters, and the one wakes up from a bad dream and the other is trying to calm her down, but as the older sister is a little annoyed with her, and the younger sister wants her to tell her a story, a fairy tale, to help her fall back to sleep. And out of nowhere, Willem and Jacob Grimm appear in their bedroom and decide to kind of take them on this magical little escapade to show them the story of Snow White. And they're a little shocked and startled by this. And off they go to learn about Snow White. Kind of reexamines assumptions that multiple generations of people have made about the story of Snow White because of our exposure to the, you know, the ever popular animated movie, you know, which has a lot of differences from the original story. We play on those differences and we kind of poke fun at some of those differences. And we also acknowledge the grimness of the original story while at the same time trying to lighten the mood and some of those elements. We have rapping dwarfs. They do a rap number called The Dwarf Life, and they enjoy that a lot. So the cast is nearly 30. I've adapted the script to as many as 50 in trying to give everyone opportunities to have speaking lines and everyone opportunities to participate in music and just adjusting it a little bit to adapt to the cast size.
Just looking ahead a little bit, do you have a season in place for the youth stage, or are you still developing that?
There's developing a season, yes. So it's not set in stone yet. We have a few shows that are in serious consideration over the next, you know, 9 to 12 months. We've acquired a space in Menominee, the headquarter, and to use as a performance space when we're not, you know, using the Mabel Tainter, or when we're not using a space in whatever community we're working in. So we're excited about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been visiting with Blaine Helgerson, playwright and director of Snow White, A Very Pale Fairy Tale. The Red Cedar Youth Production will be performed Saturday, August 23rd at the Boyceville Community High School. For ticket information, go to www.recysplayers.com. Blaine Helgerson, thanks so much for being with us. Best wishes on your new endeavor.
Thank you, sir.
A little Snow White music here for you. And thanks, Jim Oliver, as usual. Here's a Spectrum memo. Remember the Frederick Arts Melody. Medley, not melody. See, I've got that music in the back. 72 Redwood boxes filled with art have been on display, and Friday's the final display day at Bremer Bank. Then during Saturday's Frederick Craft Fair, people who have purchased boxes will pick up theirs. It's the major fundraiser for Frederick Arts. And Art Medley boxes are still available, by the way. If you have questions, show up on Saturday, or you can call 431-0209. Okay? All right. At the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory, Saturday, A Song for Summer Rain, original poems read by author Lemoyne McLaughlin for his most recent book. 7:30 p.m., there's an art exhibit that features a display of front pages from past issues of the local newspaper, the Hometown Gazette. Information for the Northern Lakes Center is at 268-6811. Spectrum memos for you here on Spectrum West. Billy McLaughlin gets around. He appears to love life and makes the most of it, even when life dishes out doses of disenchantment and frustration, like it did when he discovered he was developing focal dystonia in his left hand, exactly not where a right-handed guitar player needs an impediment. So, do you give up the guitar? Well, maybe for a while to see what it all means to you, but if you're really Billy McLaughlin, you ultimately decide to find a way because there's so much music inside yet to be played. And that's the backstory. Today, Billy McLaughlin has perfected a whole new style of playing the instrument. Check it out online if you're curious, or better yet, go see a show. He's coming to a few Wisconsin locations soon, so we thought we should reconnect. I mentioned our pal, and we just talked about him, Lemoyne McLaughlin from Amory, and how his name is pronounced differently. And he pointed out, oh, he must be Scottish, whereas Billy's ancestry is Irish. And I remembered those poor Scots and their weird gastronomical delicacy. What is that stuff again?
Haggis.
That's
Haggis.
It. Haggis. Yeah. That's the one, yeah.
Not my deal.
I think you are actually Scottish, but you tell people you're Irish so you don't have to eat haggis.
Yeah, there you go. It's good to talk to you. How's things been going?
Good. Since the last time we talked, which, by the way, was January 14th of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That was prior to an appearance at the Phipps Center in Hudson, which I attended, by the way. As there are a lot of wonderful theaters in Western Wisconsin, I know that people in Minnesota are proud of their venues, but Western Wisconsin has some pretty cool and progressive places to go. I mean, you're coming to St. Croix Falls in September.
Yeah, and that'll be my second time there, Alan. I was there as a right-handed guitar player years ago. Yeah, it's a really special thing for me. When I get a chance to come back to a place and I realize that the last time I played there, playing a lot of the same repertoire, I was a right-handed guitar player, and now I'm coming back kind of in the second coming of Billy.
You still pick up a guitar every once in a while, don't you, and play it regular?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a certain number of things I can do right-handed still that feel comfortable to me, but when it comes to playing this unique acoustic guitar, harp, tapping, whatever you want to call what I do, that's impossible for me as a right-handed player. So I've adapted like everybody has to do in their life when something unexpected comes along. You know, your choice is to, you know, let go and not try. And my approach to it was, well, what can I do with this? How can I make a bad situation something wonderful, and it has turned out that way for me since you and I last talked. Some major milestones have happened in my life that I never would have expected, and honestly, some of it has to do with the fact that I had something awful happen in my life.
So you have a new Christmas album I saw. You also won an Emmy.
That's part and parcel to what I was just saying. I was approached by a PBS station in San Diego who heard my story that I had to relearn the guitar a second time as a left-handed player, and that I had made the leap into combining acoustic steel string American guitar with the orchestra. Now, you do sometimes get to hear guitar featured with orchestra, but it would be the classical guitar with the gut string, and that comes out of that rich tradition of classical guitar. I'm not from that stream. I'm a, you know, grew up as a rock and roll player and loving James Taylor, and that's a real American steel string guitar tradition that I come from. And it occurred to me years ago, even actually back when I was healthy, that I wanted that opportunity at some point to share my music on the guitar with a backdrop, which would be orchestral.
Mm-hmm.
And then as this neurological condition came on and I retired, kind of put into forced retirement for health reasons, I thought, you know, gee, that was one thing I wish I had done, you know, before I had to give this up. And as I made my comeback as a left-handed player, I thought, you know, I'm not going to waste any time. That's one thing I want to do. I want to make sure that I feature that as part of my comeback. And so my first big concert as a left-handed guitarist included an orchestral score. And it's really a charming blend, and it's very unusual. And so this PBS station heard about it. They got intrigued, and they had an initiative to create some programming with a local orchestra, and they thought, hey, what if we put these two together? And we made this program, and darn it, it won an Emmy. It played here in the Twin Cities metro area, and anyone in western Wisconsin who picks up anything out of the Twin Cities on cable or whatever had an opportunity. It was featured heavily on Twin Cities Public Television, and I'm real proud of that piece. And in fact, the last time I played at the Phipps, I had my string quartet, and we presented that material in a kind of a downscaled version that was just delightful.
Congratulations on the Emmy, by the way. You know, when you mentioned left-handed, I don't know that I've ever heard you mention it that way, and I don't know that I have interpreted you playing left-handed when I watch, but now that I think of it, it is your right hand that's doing all of the fingering on the board. And so
correct. The hand that strums, if the hand that is doing the strumming and holding the pick is your right hand,
mm-hmm.
then you're a right-handed guitarist.
Right.
So your left hand is doing all the fancy stuff up on the neck.
Was it your, or is it your left hand that was most affected?
Yes, that's the only thing that's affected is my left forearm and my wrist and my fingers on my left hand. And it was a terrifying thing. I really hope that listeners out there can appreciate the fact that, you know, when you're healthy, when you watch a musician play their instrument and they're creating this beautiful music, there's a really miraculous display of what the human body can do when it's healthy. And oftentimes we appreciate the music, but we don't celebrate the fact that, wow, you know, the human body is just, you know, you see a guy go up for a, you know, in football and they pull a pass down out of the air, touchdown. But through music, the intricacies of what the brain and the muscle motor can do in the hands is audible. But we kind of forget about the person playing it, and that's actually part of the goal of the of the artist, is they want you to just hear the music and experience the music. But as a person who's gone through losing the ability to just pick up a guitar and play without thinking, I've gotten this other major appreciation for brain health. Really, it's about having a healthy brain and what it means for people who struggle because they have brain disorders. Mine's called dystonia. Sounds like a country in Europe somewhere.
It does.
And so dystonia is actually more common than the word might make us think. It's an unfamiliar word, but writer's cramp. People that have trouble holding a pen, and they actually get to the point where their hand clenches down and shakes and their penmanship goes terrible. It's a very common condition, and it can affect any part of the body. Right now, the estimates are about 500,000 people in America have it, and there could be another 250,000 that haven't even been diagnosed because their family practitioner might not recognize what it is.
That's the voice of Billy McLaughlin. He's a musician. He's a composer. You'd have to also call him a motivator. You know, and you were just talking about dystonia. It is also called musician's dystonia. I mean, flautists have the condition every once in a while, people who use and have to use the hand in fast ways. Your transformation happened when? In about 06?
Yeah. I initially was affected by the disorder in 98.
And
I fought through it for a couple of years and then realized that, number one, I was undiagnosed. I didn't know what was wrong, and I was so frustrated that I couldn't play my music properly and without mistakes. I mean, that's a humiliating situation for a solo artist to not be able to hit the notes correctly. And at some point you say, what am I doing out here? I'm damaging my reputation, and I retired. Then I got diagnosed, and I understood what I was dealing with and the fact that there wasn't any known cure. There continues to be no effective therapies really for this condition. So I looked at what I could do to adapt. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you're correct, it was not until about 2006, 2007 that I started to perform again as a left-handed player. Yes, it did help that I had learned the guitar once. But I'll tell you what, and listeners, go ahead and try this. When you sit down at your keyboard to Facebook people how great this interview is that you're listening to.
There you go.
Jump online and start your Facebooking right now, but flip your hands, put one hand over the other, and try to start typing quickly. And that'll explain to you what it was like for me to try to not only practice and learn my pieces, but then to be comfortable in front of an audience.
Yeah.
Has a whole nother level of kind of psychology to it.
Wouldn't it be interesting if suddenly, out of the blue, there was a cure or there was a treatment that allowed you to do what you've always done with no dysfunction? What do you think you'd do? Do you think you could go back to playing the guitar in the regular way?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. Alan, there's two-thirds of my compositions for guitar that I still cannot perform properly because it requires techniques that I've not been able. My affected hand doesn't allow me to play some of the music. So would I love, yes, if there was a therapy, a cure for this disorder, would I be happy to play right-handed again? You bet I would. Would I show off a little? by flipping the guitar over upside down in the middle of the song. Hey, that'd be kind of neat.
Yeah, you might as well.
I might get on Hee Haw. I mean, that was what Roy Clark used to do on Hee Haw sometimes. You know, in all honesty, there's people that aren't musicians that suffer from this even more than I do. And for me to have a part in advancing the cause of brain health, of neurology, of neurosciences, has really become a passion for me. And I spend quite a lot of time volunteering, and it's going to be a big part of my future here. I'm just launching a foundation, which is going to hope to celebrate Brain Aid. We've heard of Farm Aid for farmers and Live Aid for hunger, and I want to try to unite the neurologic community out there with a major international celebrity event called Brain Aid.
Neat.
Yeah, it's a lot for a guitar player to take on. I'm doing the best I can.
Well, you're a bit more than a guitar player. Here's a question for you. Do you, Billy McLaughlin, think that you'd be writing and playing the same flavor of music had your technique not changed? Did where the music was coming from change?
No.
No?
No, no, no. I grew up in a really chaotic house with a lot of brothers and sisters and a lot of chaos in the late 60s. And I escaped into music as kind of a sacred place where music just gave me something that I couldn't find in my immediate surroundings. Mm-hmm. And I think it does that for a lot of people. I even talk to middle school kids and I say, hey, you know, have you ever had a really terrible day and things went wrong and all you wanted to do was go sit somewhere and put your iPod and put your favorite song on? And they all go, yeah, that's a power in music that we really can't teach. Nobody can really understand why the arts, and it's not just music, it's drama, it's painting, it's those things that help us get in touch with the way things should be as opposed to the way things are.
Sure.
And so that's always been at the heart of what I've wanted to express.
It's the kind of music that you play that I guess I'm trying to get at. It's thoughtful and it's ethereal. I think your fan base is there and strong because your music takes us to a different kind of place. That was the base of my question. Do you think you would be playing that same kind and writing that same kind of music had you not had to put new spark plugs in and restart the engine and do it in a whole different way?
Yeah, no, I do. I do think, I mean, that is what I'm dedicated to. I believe in the sort of transformational ability of music. And I've had some fun writing some real literal sort of rock and roll songs.
Yeah.
She's my girlfriend, stay away from her, you know, that kind of, but you're right, that's not what my fans know me for. They know me for music that engages their imagination, hopefully their heart and their spirit, and yet is still real melody-driven. I think that melodies are what we can share. Let's say this, an audience that can't whistle a melody together because the artist isn't playing anything that they could actually kind of, you know, participate with, that's not the situation I want to be in. I've always paid a lot of attention to being clear about what the melody is, because the melody, again, is the thing that we share together.
The best thing that musicians do, they give melodies as gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And people take it with them, and they keep it with them. They remember where they got it.
One of the most honest composers, you know, I'm not talking rock and roll here, but Brahms. Brahms was so honest when he was asked, where do your melodies come from? And he said, I have no idea. They come from out of the blue. When I'm lucky enough to grab them and share them in my surroundings on earth, I feel blessed. thank God for public radio, I'll tell you, you know, because...
Here, here, there, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of music that we wouldn't get to enjoy if it weren't for public radio.
Billy McLaughlin, you mentioned the term, and I will ask you to keep doing it. Keep engaging our imaginations, will you?
Yeah, absolutely, and I cannot wait for this show in St. Croix Falls. Coming up in September.
And you're going to Viroqua, I understand, in December. That's probably going to be a Christmassy thing?
Yeah, that's a Christmas event. It'll be my first time at Viroqua. We were near there in West Salem, which is, you know, La Crosse, West
sure.
Salem area. And so we'll be celebrating Christmas in Viroqua. And then anyone who's a little closer to the metro will be on the other side of the river in Marine on St. Croix for the last 4 days before Christmas Eve. That's a really fun time of year. This group that I started it because of my dystonia, because I was not able to be the hotshot gunslinger guitar player anymore. But I still wanted to make beautiful music. It features four fabulously talented women, three vocalists, just a heck of a celebration of the traditional hymns.
And that group is Simple Gifts. We'll contact you before the holidays and talk to you again and maybe play some of your tunage on the show.
That'd be great, Alan.
Billy,
it's so,
thanks.
It's so great to be in touch. Thanks for making time for me, everybody.
Billy McLaughlin, likable and enthusiastic. When you watch him play, you just know it's what he was put here to do. He's at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls, Saturday, September 6th, and at BillyMcLaughlin.com.
Support for WPR comes from Herbster Studio Art Tour along the south shore of Lake Superior, featuring home studios showcasing artistic talent and artwork silent auction August 16th and 17th, open to the public. More at HerbsterStudioArtTour.com.
Spectrum West. It's the 14th of August, unless you're listening on Friday, and then it's the 15th of August. The Northwoods Rock Rally is a loud and proud kick you know what rock show. 3 days of unapologetic music from some of the best and most strident artists of the craft. Names like Fully Loaded, Royal Bliss, Buck Cherry, or if you'd rather, Black Stone Cherry, Trapped, and more. If unassuming means meek and inconspicuous, then the Rock Rally is assuming with a capital A. And amid the enthusiasm and commotion, you might think its reputation is less than spotless. But this is the 8th year they've pulled this off, all without incident or episode. The present-day patriarch of it all is Wayne Zank, somewhat of a music business legend in West Wisconsin and beyond. He and I talked just the other day. Well, 8 years, and you have had the chance to iron out some wrinkles. Tell us about the idea of starting this thing in the first place, since it's not an easy thing to pull off.
We were really good friends with Barb and Phil Schmidt.
Okay.
They approached me about 9 years ago, and we decided to do this festival. I had quite some experience in doing these types of things over the last 40 years. So we just decided to go ahead and do it. It's on a field way up by Glen Flora, just off of Highway 8. And it's beautiful. It's farmland when it's not being used, so they grow hay up there, and then the grounds are awesome, surrounded by woods. There's a creek that flows right alongside of it. It's beautiful up there.
Is it Woodstock-esque? Is it kind of a natural amphitheater? Has a slope to it?
Yeah. We built the main stage the third year, and so that's a permanent fixture. And then we use a couple of really big tents. At any one given time, if it rains over the weekend, pretty much put everybody in those tents and still get rock and roll, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, the biggest thing in putting on a rock rally, you know, it's a loud and it's a boisterous stage show for 3 days, is two things, the venue and the neighborhood, because they have to buy into this.
Well, and they do. I mean, we get support from all the neighbors up there. They, you know, the rally brings a lot of people from a long distance away and brings a lot of money into the community.
Mm-hmm.
little notoriety. The police force, all the security up there, they're all farmer type people, everybody else up here. So, you know, they don't herd people around like animals. It's just a real nice thing. 8 years, we've had no altercations at all.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, to have the support of law enforcement and emergency personnel, that's big.
Yeah, they're there and they have fun and they drink their coffee and just there for safety, you know.
There's a bunch of competition out there, Wayne, for music festivals, but not that many in the heavier rock category, is there? So you have kind of a nice niche.
We do, and it's been growing over the years. We've kind of brought things up a little bit to the more current side of things. Went from the old 80s classic rock, and now we're starting to get some of the newer stuff in, and it's working out really well.
You also have camping, and that makes it an all-inclusive 3 days. You have nice, large campsites, I read.
We do, and they're infield, well-manicured, good security all night long. Really doesn't much of anything negative happen. It's just 3 days of really a lot of fun partying for everybody.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
It's over 18, and you have to be 18 to be there.
That's a good thing, I think, huh? You also have cardboard NASCAR races. I have a question mark after that one. Tell me about it.
What happens is people build cardboard cars, and they get inside of them, and then we have a big circular track just like NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
And so they build these fancy cardboard race cars and get in there, and, you know, at that point in time, they've started their daily party, and so everybody's feeling pretty good. They line up, and there's several rounds of it. So when the race starts, the people start running around this racetrack. Well, just like NASCAR, every little while they got to stop, do a pit stop.
Sure.
And when they do the pit stop, their pit crew is there, and they have to chug a beer, and the pit crew has to change their shoes. And then they run along. Run a little ways farther, and they do that a couple of three times, and then whoever wins.
So the people are the cars?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
They run around. Sometimes they fall down, run into each other.
Wow.
But it's just hilarious. We'll have a crowd of 400 or 500 people out there just watching these people do this.
That's on my bucket list now.
Yeah.
I should be in one of those.
Absolutely. Big old WPR on the side of it.
There you go. I'm starting to picture my pit crew already. We don't have time, Wayne, to mention all your sponsors, but it does appear that a lot of folks have decided to jump on the bandwagon. You do have a lot of support.
We do. The local support, it's just a fun thing, and there's never any trouble, so there's nothing negative about it.
That's cool. 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, August 14th, 15th, 16th. It's called the Northwoods Rock Rally. Wayne Zank on the phone with us. The main stage people who are on from, 8:30 to midnight, are they perceived as the headliners?
Yes.
Okay.
The most famous ones play last, you know, but they've all got good records. We've got a really good lineup for the main stage. On Friday, it's Fourth Floor. They've been together about 9 years, a little more. They're from the Eagle River area. They travel extensively, play all the time, and draw great crowds. Everybody loves Fourth Floor. And then we've got Royal Bliss out of Utah, which is also a national touring act. They've got some good records out, too. We've actually sold some tickets from Florida just to come up and see Royal Bliss.
Hmm.
The last band on Friday night is Buck Cherry, really a popular band. And then Saturday night we have Saving Abel, Trapped, and Blackstone Cherry.
Knowing what I know about amplification, that electricity's got to be a big deal on that property.
We use big generators.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, they're in the backstage area. You can't hear them. It's not an extraordinarily loud thing.
Okay.
We kind of take care of it. We've got the 10th bands under real good control. Milo Manson does the sound in there, and it's all really, really good gear. Instead of being real super loud, it's just going to sound real good, but it won't make your ears bleed.
That's
and then
cool.
We got Dave McSweeney on the main stage, and he brings in just what he needs. We choke that up so that we don't hurt anybody, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you got all your bases covered. Sounds like you're ready.
We're ready. This year is bigger than ever.
Good deal. Well, Wayne, thanks again. I appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you for the interview. We appreciate it, and we hope to see that NASCAR up there at the races.
Someday.
NorthwoodsRockRally.com, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The cardboard NASCAR races are Friday and Saturday afternoons at 3:30. Actually, now that I think of it, Rich Kramer should be the car. I'll simply be a member of the pit crew. That seems to be a little better idea.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Dragon, a production of Community Arts of Fall Creek, will be staged Friday through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Menominee Theater Guild's Shakespeare in the Park project will present Hamlet Friday through Sunday at the Wilson Park Bandshell in Menominee. Peter Pan, a production of the Old Gem Theater of New Richmond, will be staged for the public tonight, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. There will be daytime performances for groups on Friday. The Wide Spot Junior Players will present The Planet of the Perfectly Awful People Friday at the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will present The Sound of Music through Sunday. The St. Croix Festival Theater's production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum will play on Friday. Almost Maine will be staged at the Festival Theater on Saturday. And the theater's So Good Improv Troupe will perform Friday in the Elbow Room at the Festival Theater. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will hold auditions for Sideways Stories from Wayside School at 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at the Oxford Theater. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, you are. Thank you, sir. Man, had a good time today. Hope you did, too. Great program coming up next week as we put a ribbon around this week's edition. We'll travel up to the old Rittenhouse Inn. They have a new cookbook and so much more. We'll meet the members of the band Softly Dear. Kind of from around here. They met at UW Eau Claire. They're on tour out east. The wine that's produced in our neighborhood is getting recognized. And more, always more, on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks. See ya.